Well, it's Sunday morning, and this is August the 11th. This is the opening day for Magic Live in Las Vegas, and I'm here at the airport in Houston, Texas, at Hobby Airport, actually getting ready to fly on Southwest for a change. They seem to have some good flights in and out of Las Vegas. So the line was just off the hook this morning, crazy. Gee, I had to wait about 40 minutes just to, even though I had a ticket, just to get up to the front gate and check in my luggage, and then about another 15 minutes or so through TSA. They don't have the global entry pre-check here yet, which, by the way, I highly recommend. If you guys haven't got that or checked into that, if you do much traveling at all, that you can bypass a lot of these lines. But that's just really for international airports, and right now Hobby Airport is not on that list, but they're going to be converting this over to an international airport before long. But many airports do recognize that. The important thing is there you can save time and bypass security of having to take off your shoes and your, have your laptop taken out of your backpack, etc. So you can probably save hours of time for just a very low price in getting that global entry. So I recommend that you do that. But unfortunately, as I said, Hobby doesn't have that. So as I got to the gate here finally, I'm going to be glad I got here early because we depart in about 25 minutes. So the temperature, they said, in Las Vegas today is going to be a high of 102, which doesn't mean a whole lot necessarily to me since I'm going to be in the hotel, which should probably be just a comfortable 70 or 72 degrees, which is good gambling weather. More importantly, it's good magic weather for Magic Live, that is. So we'll be boarding here shortly. I'm getting pretty excited. And let me also point out that they're going to be doing a lot of tweeting, I guess, through this. So that's hashtag Magic Live or hashtag ML13. And I'm going to be posting some things from time to time also at hashtag Magic Word Podcast. That's not the Magic Word Podcast. It's just hashtag Magic Word Podcast. There we go. Anyhow, I'll see you in Las Vegas. Scotty out. All right, well, Magic Live is not really started, but we just checked in over here just a short time ago at the Orleans, and I just checked in the room, got my picture taken for my photo and everything, so that's kind of cool. So I'm all registered as I did. Happen to run into Marvin Roy, Mr. Electric. Hello, Marvin. Good to see you.
Hi, Scotty. It's good to be. Good to see you again. Actually.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good to see you as well.
I always say it takes a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a funeral to get us all together, or a magic convention to get us all together.
Or a magic convention.
Great. Going to be a great convention.
I think it should be very good. Now, you come, of course, every time, you know, for all the conventions. Yeah. Then,
well, I wouldn't miss it. I wouldn't miss it.
This is your second home.
Yeah, well, you know, magic is a family.
It is.
And, you know, we all come together. I don't know if it's in sickness or health or success or failure, but we always come together. I think it's the only performing arts form that has this camaraderie so much as magic has it.
That's a very good point. You know, there are people who are singers who can get together for choirs or different kinds of conferences or whatever and practice or compete or whatever, but I think they're more in competition with each other, whereas here there's more of a brotherly kind of a thing and we share ideas and things, you know.
Magic is a love affair.
I like that. That's true.
Well, from a professional point of view, if you don't love it, you can't make it.
Yeah.
But even from when guys are just, and I use this term.
Guys and girls.
Of course. An amateur or semi-professional one. You got to love it. You got to love it. It's got to come from you.
Right.
You know? Because it brings so much happiness to people. Whatever you do, I don't care if you do a card trick or you do an act or whatever. It's always great to
as long as it's done well.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah. Oh,
if it's not done well.
we won't talk about that.
But that's why we're here, to learn to do it better.
Well, this is a unique convention.
Yeah.
No contests, no politics.
Right.
Just a little bit.
The idea is, again, that this is the only profession really where we have this kind of conference, so we can actually share each other and have brotherly and fraternal love for each other and respect.
It's true. It's true, Bob. It's true, Scotty. I mean, It's truly a love affair. I remember Carrie used to say to me, she wasn't sure who I loved the most, either her or the goddess of magic, you know? But she knew. And I look at all these youngsters now, and they're just wonderful. And they're all there looking good with stars in their eyes, and I know just that whole feeling. It's a wonderful road to travel.
Right.
If you're fortunate enough to have a product that is of this time, and can make a success of it. It's a wonderful, wonderful life. I wouldn't have changed the line anyway. Wouldn't have changed it. I was just lucky. I had two things that made me lucky. First, I was lucky enough to have Ray Mews, who always taught me to be out of the hat.
Uh-huh.
And the light bulb act was, it's time, and quite successful, and I had Carol.
And Carol, right.
And without Carol, I would never have made the success I did.
Right, right. I was going to ask you about your music. Did you have that specially written for you that you used to use all the time?
Well, in the old days, we all had special. In the old days, there was no such thing as tapes.
Of course not.
I mean,
right.
Everything was live music.
And so you had a score. You would give the band director.
Yeah. You always carried 12, 8, 15 pieces with you, mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate. And what we did with music was we kept it apropos. Mm-hmm. Of the time. When the Beatles were there, it was Beatle music.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it was of the time.
It sounded like something like from the Love Boat or something the shows,
well,
drama.
Kept it apropos.
Yeah.
Carol was always up to it. Everything was up to date for the time, and that's what we tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
But 1999 was 50 years that we did it consistently all over the world.
Wow.
And I said, that's enough.
Decide that's when you're going to hang it up.
I'll watch the youngsters now. Let them have
it. Well, one of the things, speaking of youngsters then as well, and we're talking about this kind of convention, I think that's an important thing that people come to these things so that we can have this kind of camaraderie, and have these kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
Because you just can't have that kind of interaction online and the internet, and people think, I'll just stay home.
One-on-one is the only way.
Of course.
And that's like today, the only downside of which I see is that a lot of the youngsters grow up on this, on the DVDs and that sort of thing, where it's like instant magic. And that's unfortunately not all of them, because out of nowhere there'll all be a new kid on the block.
Yeah.
But you start there. But you know everything in magic is in the books, and you got to read, because you can put yourself into it. If you're doing a DVD. You copy.
Right.
And that's what they do.
Well, that's what Roger Klaus always told me, your best investment's in books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, books is the whole thing.
Yeah.
But, people say to me, or youngsters will say to me, well, how do you make there's no living and there's no more magic, and how do you make a living? I say, I've heard that
probably all your life.
Thing since I started in magic.
Yeah.
I heard it when I was first saying, Marvin, why are you going into magic? There's no one there. There's always a living in magic.
Yeah.
But the trick is, you have to have a product, and you have to go to where the work is. The work will not come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the problem. And a lot of the youngsters, and I don't blame them. I mean, when we left this country in 56 to go to Europe, where we were for almost 25, 30 years, there was no work for a silent act here.
Yeah.
But there was in Europe, in the Middle East, and the Far East, and that's where we went. But who the hell wants to leave this great country?
Right.
I mean, you got to.
But that's where the work was.
This is the greatest country in the world.
Yeah.
And, having seen the world and worked in it and been in revolutions and been all kinds of things, which is in the book. By the way, Scotty, I'm doing a audiobook.
Oh, you are? You're going to just read the book, with your voice? That's great.
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
I've read that. It's one of my favorite books.
Well, I wanted...
It was a love letter to Carol, for sure.
Yes, it was a love letter. Mike Caven used to always push me, because the book was published 10 years ago.
Yeah. And boy, time flies, 10 years.
And,
for those who don't know, the title of the book is?
Mr. Electric Unplugged.
There we go.
But there's a story on that, too.
Okay.
But I wanted to do it. And basically, he said to me, well, we'll get an actor to... You read it, and I said, "No, I wrote it. I'll read it."
Yeah,
but I didn't realize how much work it was, Scotty. It's 500 pages.
Yeah,
of the when it was reprinted in big tape, and it'll run 18 hours recorded time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you'll sit down and turn it on for 18 hours, Scotty, if you want.
I just listened to Dan Brown's Inferno, and I think it was like 36 hours. I don't know how, but it was like 112
now
chapters.
I talked to a technician here, and I said, How many DVDs do I got to get this thing on? He says, it's called
MP3.
Something else, and you can put it all on. I said, the whole 18 hours?
Oh, yeah.
I said, wonderful.
All on a flash drive.
But I didn't know enough. That's why I've lost my voice. I tried to... What they did is they set up a whole studio in my living room.
Yeah.
I thought all you had to do was just put a thing down here.
Yeah, no.
No.
That sound. And
I said to him, just tell me which buttons to push. You know, yes, yes, I know. But I didn't know it was going to be. I've been doing it for 2 months now.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to be so much work.
2 months?
Yeah.
And is it finished?
Well, I can't. Almost.
Okay.
That's why I'm trying to save my voice. So mm-hmm. And Mike just said to me, because Mike's editing it.
Yes.
And I said, well, Marvin, why are you coming? I said, maybe the end of September. You know? He said, well, I want it out.
For a Christmas release.
By, maybe the history conference.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So I'm going to try to... It's called The Legacy.
The Legacy.
So that tells the story.
Tell me that story. I want to circle back to what you said. There was a little story about why it was called Unplugged.
Oh, well, because I always loved the title. I had picked the title was Around the World in 50 Years with a Light Bulb and a Blonde.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great good story. And you know Mike. Mike's one of my boys.
Yeah.
And soft-spoken. I just love him. And he wanted to publish the book. And I was thrilled. Because Mike has so much class.
Absolutely. I got all the
books.
He
comes from that, the way he was brought up, and I knew he would do a classy, elegant version, which is my style.
Yeah.
This is the era I lived in, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I gave him when finally written, it took me 2 years to write the book. It was that thick, because I did it all.
Yeah.
Wrote it by hand, and
goodness.
Then typed it.
Okay.
So he went. And I said, what's the title, Marv? I said, Around the World in 50 Years with a Light Bulb and a Blonde. Oh. And when he had it all but done,
mm-hmm.
he came to me, and I forget, he came over to the house, and Carol and I, he said, Marvin, he said, I have a problem. I said, what's that? He said, Marvin, Around the World in 50 Years with a Light Bulb and a Blonde, you can't get that on the spine of a book, you know? And I said, he said, what about Mr. Electric Unplugged? Well, being in love with magic, I live magic. I don't know anything about music terms.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a musical term.
Exactly.
That you go out and then...
Right.
And Carol,
guitar,
of course, is so in and out of it. She said, I said, I don't like that. And he said, Carol said, that's good. That's what you... And I said, well... Mike and Carol were right,
and that's
the way.
Well, I recall that he had published, Mike had published Terry Seabrook's book, I think, also, which was Around the World with a Baking Tin.
Oh, yeah, something like that. So that's how it came about.
Yes. Well, you talked about Mike being one of your boys, and I know you have such a large extended family.
I have
and
a
so
whole
many
family.
Loving, one of the piece of advice that I remember, my good buddy Murray Sawchuk had said you gave him was to have a silent act and you can tour the world.
Well, it's true. That's true. The great thing about a silent, if you're capable of doing a silent act, the silent act is the silent 9-minute act, which is what the worldwide market demands because of language, obviously.
Sure.
And because in most of the world, there's no middle class. It's the rich and the poor, and the rich go to cabaret. And cabaret audiences have seen every magician in the world. And that's why you, as much as I would like the Lincoln Rings, the Billy Bowl, and the Billy Bowl, so does everybody else.
So does everybody else.
That's how the light bulb act came to be.
Yeah.
But Murray is one of my boys, and I'm very, very proud. Very, very, very proud.
Yeah. Very, done very, very well.
You asked me something about Murray. I didn't quite...
Well, no, that was just saying that was a piece of advice that you had given Murray, and I know that you passed on to others, and that is just that to have a silent act. You were talking about having a good 9-minute act.
Yeah, because, the other thing is, too, from an economic point of view, God forbid the whole economy falls out of this great country. And it never will with all the talk they talk about.
Yeah.
We have such a great country. There's always some place in the world you can work with a silent act. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
You're willing to go to it.
To where the work is.
But as I say, a lot of the American boys here, and I don't blame them, as I say. Who in the hell wants to do what Carol and I did, to go through revolutions and get cheated and get... all kinds of
things.
It's
all in the book.
But you're doing what you love to do and you get paid for it. You
know, and live like a millionaire, like you say.
Yes, you do. And you meet people and we would never have met. Think about it.
That's true. Well,
none of us would never. But when I used to lecture, I used to say that most men and women work at a job for 50 weeks out of the year that they hate and go fishing 2 weeks out of the year. I say, I go fishing 52 weeks out of the year, and I get paid for it as well.
That's a good way to...
Yeah.
We can leave it there, because I want you to conserve your voice then, too. Let me ask you one other quick question. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. What is your magic word? It doesn't have to be like hocus pocus or abracadabra. What is your life force? What is your motto? What is it? It could be a phrase, something you live by. Love.
Love. Because if you're not in love with what you do, if you're not really in love with your partner... if you're not really in love with the country in which you live in, you have a hard time making it.
Yeah.
But if you do love your partner, if you do love your magic, if you do love your country, where you can get all the freedom in the world to choose. My father was an industrialist who came from Germany in the 1900s, spoke no English, had no money, worked their ways to the gold fields in Bakersfield, worked as bartenders, and saved enough money to buy a horse and wagon. And in those days, paper boxes were for some reason at a premium.
Hmm. Okay.
And my father got the idea of collecting old paper boxes, putting them in good shape, and selling them at a price. My father is the one, and became a very big business. And my father is the one who created recycling.
Oh.
And that's how it came into being. And he became a very wealthy man,
yeah,
very successful man, all from, because you have freedom in this country to do, and you still do.
Yeah.
But love is the word.
To make whatever you want.
Love is the word.
What is your last name? I mean, as far as, it's not Roy, but then it was...
Well, I'm of the Jewish descent. And I was born with the name of Marvin Levy.
Levy.
And the way the name change came about, which is in the book, is during the Second World War, I was one of the youngsters that walked into Normandy on the Second World War and got a head full of shrapnel, of course, among other things, and eventually was put into a special survey unit with other of my elk who were wounded and fought in Africa and Italy and in France. And I was a kid in the group called Laughs Incorporated. It's in the book. And they treated me so well. And at one point, Jack Martin, who was a dancer with This Is the Army thing, and I think had been wounded in North Africa, said to me, Marvin Levy, that doesn't look too good on me. I said, well, what would you suggest? He said, how about Roy? Marvin Roy.
Hmm. Got a nice ring to it.
That's a great idea. Thank you very much. So it stuck. So the great point of that point is that when the name really became, and the name was, I finally went back home one of these times, because in those days, if you stayed out of the country 18 months, you could come back into the United States, and you got a tax break in those days for the 18 months.
Hmm.
And my father, who was a tall German self-made guy, I mean, he was a guy that said to me, Marvin, you want to go into this thing called magic and do that? I give you my blessings. He says, but it doesn't work out. You come back here and work in the factory. No bumming around.
Yeah.
And my father, I made it, but my father did see me do it. But anyway, so when we came back at one point, I said to my mother, Mom, I'm going to have to change my name legally to Marvin Roy, because Carol and I, it comes out Marvin Roy, Carol Levy, and it comes out all mixed up. And for work permits and police permits, which we have to have.
Sure.
She said, oh, you better talk to your father.
Yeah.
So Dad and I are walking down the street. And he's
tall guy.
I said, Pop, I said, show business, yeah. And, I said, we have Marvin Levy, Marvin Roy, and I explained to him about the work permits and the whole thing. I said, I'm going to change the name legally to Marvin Roy. And Dad looked at me and said, should have done before.
Just like that.
That was it.
And so it happened.
That was my father.
There you go.
Take a good care,
Marvin.
Now.
Thank you very much.
So
good talking
to you.
A pleasure as well. So for now, this is Marvin Roy and Scotty out. All right. Well, we kind of move on down the aisle over here, and everybody is over here. I just ran into David Ball and that's right. Glad to see you both. And so you guys just had lunch, kind of a late lunch, I guess, over at Mandalay Bay.
Right.
And so you were here yesterday or just got here today then?
Very late last night. By the time we got to bed, it was like 5 a.m. on the East Coast.
Okay. So, yeah. I'm trying to get your caught up on sleep and everything.
Right. That's actually where we're headed for a nap.
Okay. Well, I'll let you take off because there's really not too much happening until like 7:30 or something.
Right.
When the opening party's going to be.
Yes.
But since I saw you, I was going to ask you, though, about the status of the theater. I understand that was up for sale. Has it sold? Is it?
It is not sold yet. We are actively marketing it. We got a great real estate firm, and we're regrouping down at the Larkham Theater, which is our other original vaudeville theater, even older than the Cabot,
right,
in Beverly. And we're going to start doing like off-Broadway and Broadway touring shows.
Are you?
And music concerts there starting in October.
At the Larkin.
At the Larkin.
Okay. For those who are listening, let me back up just one moment. Well, as I mentioned, David Bull, some of you may not recognize, might know him better by Le Grand David, the Grand David show in Beverly, Massachusetts. So they're going to be having touring shows coming through the Larkin.
Right.
And so you won't be having so much of the Le Grand David show.
That's something, you know, we're talking about for the future, but right now we're getting these stage
touring
shows and concerts in there,
right,
touring. And but it leaves the stage open for other opportunities that we're looking into.
But as far as the movie theater goes, you're not showing movies anymore then?
We are showing movies. As long as we're the owners, we're going to be
continue
in there.
With that.
And we are doing that.
Okay. You've had that up for sale for how long now? Almost a year?
No, it's just
6 months?
Mid-May.
Oh, okay. Just a few months then.
Yes.
Okay, good. And how's the rest of everybody else that's with associated with the show?
Everybody's great. You know, we're in a new chapter in our lives,
yes,
like me.
Yes.
And everybody is, you know, pursuing their interests and
right,
helping out at the theater when they can. And so
right,
this is a whole new chapter, not a whole new book.
I was about to say that I've got some of the books that you have given me in the past. Is there something, literally a book, is there going to be something else written, a new another book to add to the years?
I think that's a few years off, but
okay,
yes, I think you can look forward to that.
Well, yeah, it's kind of keeping us up to date as to what's happening. Because there should be just one ultimate book, you know, kind of a picture book. I could see the something
right,
like Siegfried and Roy put together that was
yeah,
just
yeah,
a beautifully bound book of all of their things. I
yes,
could see something from the Grand David show that for all the
yes,
years.
Yes, that's going to take a while.
30, how many
5 years.
35 years.
Yes.
Wow. Well, and you were like two, I think, when you started, weren't
exactly,
you?
Exactly. And in the Guinness Book of World Records since 99, so.
Yeah. So where is Seth, by the way?
Seth is now 41 years old.
Oh, my God.
Married with a beautiful young daughter. Top executive in a software company based
yeah,
in Cambridge, Mass. He lives right up the road from Beverly.
Yeah.
And great, you know, old guy now.
Yeah, I think of you guys every day, including Seth, because I, you know, got a couple different posters that are hanging
yeah,
in my office, and then one of them, as I walk down the steps, is the old Peacock poster
sure,
that you and Seth and
Cesario
had signed. And who was the guy who was the clown? That
the original clown.
The original clown.
Professor Besko.
Besko. That's yeah. He signed the thing then
yeah,
also.
Great,
you know,
great.
Back when, so.
Oh yeah, that's an old one. That's
yeah,
a classic.
Yeah, and so I think of you guys like every day when I come down. Well, listen, take a nap. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Have a good convention. We'll see you guys later. Congratulations. See ya. Bye, Kristen. So, as I said, a lot of stuff that is happening as I kind of walk down over here at the Orleans Hotel, and people are still checking in and getting their name badges and obviously running into a lot of old friends and new ones in as well, and different registrants at the convention. Seems like you can't swing a dead cat or throw a dead pigeon. Well, there's Paul Harris over there and Tyler Knight right now. So everybody is kind of around. And so let's see who else visit. And hey, Tim. Good to see you, man. How you been? Tim Felix.
Hanging in.
Good. And, oh, golly, let's see who else that... run into David Sandy and Lance as we were walking around there a few moments ago. I got to chat with them briefly. Didn't get to turn on my microphone. Let me see. Who else? Golly. Tom Vorjahan, Daniel Heron. You know, one of the interesting things, too, is we kind of checked in to the hotel, rather to the registered for the convention, is all the interns. So everything really went through very smoothly. And then after that, then you just kind of line up, get your picture taken, and boom, and the whole thing's done in less than 5 minutes. And the little goodie bag that everybody got was a nice satchel or briefcase. Not a briefcase, just kind of a laptop bag that you can throw over your shoulder and carry with lots of stuff. And then tonight, of course, we're going to be having the welcoming party, and I understand we're going to be having the trading cards that they will give to everyone. And then once we get the trading cards, we'll be able to put those into little sleeves that came with this plastic insert in their three-ring binder for the Magic Live thing, so this way that you can put your cards in there. And again, this is kind of a thing, as I recall from previous years, that they have different covers from the Magic magazine, and they give each person an envelope that has all of one cover. And I think you just go around, it gives you an opportunity to chat with other people, and you swap cards, you know, yours with someone else's, and it's a nice little social get-together. Well, anyhow, lots of things happening. I see Steve Brookson over here. Of course, you know Steve as being the editor of the Magic Cafe. And if I can just get him for just a minute, I'm going to see if I can have him say hello. Hey, Steve.
Oh, Scott, you tracked me down again. What can I do for you, kind sir?
Well, we're on the podcast. I was going to record something for podcast posterity over here. So what's new with the Magic Cafe? You've been continuing to add more columns, new content?
Yes, it's continually growing. We get an average of 20 to 50 new members a day.
A day, wow.
So it's...
I told my wife we had like... you have like 40,000 subscribers. Is that correct?
Well, technically, we have like 53,000 registered members.
Registered.
Oh, that's just the registered ones.
Yes.
I mean, you're not counting.
The
lurkers. Every time you log in and you see that there's like 130 or 150 people online, what it's not telling you is there is another 7 to 8,000 people lurking.
Lurking, all right.
At any one time.
Yeah. They could read anything, obviously, and get it because it's all free content.
Yeah, I mean, I just did a bandwidth. I went into the server logs before I came to Vegas, and we pulled like 921 gigs of bandwidth last month. And that's summertime. So that's like slow, right? Because normally in the summer, people go on vacations, whatever. And no, you know, it's like the cafe. It could be Christmas time, and there are people on there. And I log on, and I'm like, it's Christmas. What are you doing on the cafe?
With your family.
Exactly.
They're telling everybody what their newest gift is.
Yeah, exactly.
What was your magic gift? Your toy you got?
That's
interesting.
That's
right. We're podcasting now as well. Hey there, Paul. So Paul Draper just came up then.
I'll step out of the way.
No, just say hello.
Hi. How you doing? I think those security guys come in and are looking for Paul.
But no, as we were just talking off air a moment ago, just about the importance of free content. And there's a lot of free stuff that you can get online from YouTube where people are learning tricks or they're exposing tricks, like, you know, here's how you do this or that, or something that people are making a living at and trying to sell, and other people just say, okay, well, here's how it's done, you know, for free. And that's one thing, which obviously you and I both don't agree should be done, but the kind of content that you're giving away with the Magic Cafe and what I do then with the Magic Word is something that hopefully people can learn. It's like a library, you know, that people can delve into for free and don't have to register or have a library card, you know.
That's the idea is no matter what your financial status is, you have an opportunity to learn something, to read something. You know, the internet's a funny beast because when we start talking about torrents and illegal copies and ethics and morality, the real question has to be, because the internet covers boundaries of geography, then the real question is, who ethics are we talking about, yours or mine?
Yes.
So what is perfectly acceptable in Singapore may be frowned upon in the United States.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who's right, us or them? Mm-hmm. I think somewhere the answer is in between. So the internet, when you start crossing oceans and going into other countries, how do you, I mean, you cannot, do we really want the government coming in and saying you can't do this and you can do this? I mean, we don't want more of that interference. Yet on the other hand, you've got people downloading things, and I mean, here's the real thing when it comes to any kind of downloads of torrents, illegal, whether it's DVDs, whether it's lecture notes, whatever it is, they're stealing, and make no mistake, they are stealing it.
Yeah, taking money out of your
If
pocket.
I ask you to come to my house and mow my lawn, you certainly are going to want to get paid for your time, and understandable. So, if a man spends his entire life writing a novel, he should be expected to at least get something for it, at least in his lifetime.
Sure.
But having said all of that, if you really think about it, everything that you have, whether it's a cell phone, a toothbrush, the TV you watch, a deck of cards, everything you have was invented or created or improved upon because there could be money to be made from doing this.
Right.
Almost all your inventions wasn't because I'm out of the kindness of my heart, I'm going to invent this thing for the world. No, no, no. They invented it because maybe I can sell it. A factory came up with it and manufactured it.
Well, they're looking to feed themselves, obviously.
I mean, well, yes.
Even if they give the majority of it or, you know, profit or whatever to charity or whatever, but the intent, I would have to agree, would be initially in order to subsist, to have, you know,
exactly.
You can still live.
I mean, I don't know about you, but at my house, my wife thinks we need electricity. I don't know what that's all about. You know, I'm like, well, why can't we sleep in the car and use candles?
Candles.
So, you know, so that means
well,
I have to earn money.
Kind of a moral issue to a degree also that Walter Blaney in Houston, and you know, used to be the president of the WAM, World Alliance of Magicians, and of course was on a campaign particularly about illusions and people being ripped off. And specifically, I remember one story he was telling me where that a guy in Africa, you know, had ripped off his ladder levitation, basically.
Right.
And he's saying, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Well, the conversation he had with the guy was to say, but the issue is that it costs so much money, and that just to buy the hoop for $1,400, that could be our annual salary.
Right.
You know, and so how can we possibly afford a $14,000 illusion? Yeah, so I'm not ripping you off. I'm building something. I see how that it's made. I'm trying to build it, you know. Well, you know, so should you say, well, sorry, you know, you're poor and you just can't have one?
Well, there are cultures in certain countries where plagiarism itself... If I live in one of those countries and I steal your music or your song or your product and I make a counterfeit version of it, let's say, you should be honored that I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the United States, it's like, what the hell?
Well, yeah.
You know, so...
It's not a sincere form of flattery here.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And again, laws change from country to country, from state to state, from Providence or whatever. I mean, how do you... I'm not sure at this point. The internet and all this technology is still so very new to everybody.
Yeah.
So we haven't... The laws... And the etiquette and the ideas haven't caught up to the technology. The technology is great, but it's moving so quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, you go out, you buy the greatest computer, and a week later somebody walks up to you and goes, oh, you're still using the B7000, huh? Well, I got the B12000.
Yeah.
It just never ends.
That's true, yeah.
So we spend our time trying to keep up with the latest apps and the downloads and this and how this works, and it's so difficult. And now, of course, here in the United States, the government's decided, hey, we're missing out on money somehow. So laws are starting to change the way things are taxed.
Yeah.
And you're going to see more and more and more changes. A lot of times things aren't changed until it's affecting someone personally. And they're like, hey, that's not good. We need to change that. So I don't know. It's there's no easy answers.
Obviously not.
When you have a website like the Cafe that's so large and has so many different people from different parts of the world, it's easy to take a glance and see some young kids or a couple guys arguing about something that seemingly is trivial. And say, well, yeah, that's just a bunch of people fighting. That's like saying New York City is a bad city. I don't believe New York City is a bad city. I believe it's a very large city, so therefore there's more bad people in it, and we have to have more police.
Yeah, but percentage-wise, you know, the small towns are the same.
Exactly. And when you have any hobby like magic, it could be music. I know I have comedian friends. And, I mean, you think magicians argue, you got to be around these guys. And, you know, he stole my line and he stole my routine. I mean, it's the same thing. So when you're passionate about something, yes, you're going to get online. And, of course, being online brings this...
You can hide behind that sometimes, too.
Yeah,
so I think in the
cafe,
people can send those flames. That's why you've got so many people who are editing each of those.
And, you know, and the thing is, I also tell people, look, if you're in the middle of a topic and somebody comes along and they start causing problems, it takes two people to argue.
Yeah.
Don't even respond to them. Just keep talking past them.
Yeah.
If nobody is talking to him, he can't push your button.
Yeah.
He'll stop.
It's like wrestling with a pig. You know, the pig enjoys it and you get dirty.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to let you go over here, but before we do that, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So what is your magic word? Or philosophy or motto or, you know, your chi? What do you live by?
That's a good question.
What's important to you?
Try to try to look at the world positive. You know, a lot of times when I hear an ambulance go by, a lot of people were like, oh my God, who got in an accident?
Mm-hmm.
And I always think, wow, I wonder who's getting rescued.
Yeah.
So it's dependent on how you look at life. So
always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so, and I don't let myself get caught up in other people's realities. You know, you could go on the internet and you can, people are going to write things or they're going to say things, and it's so easy to take it personal when you got to step back and say, wow, that's an interesting little reality that they've built around themselves in their little bedroom somewhere, you know? That's not real life, but okay.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, thanks for talking to me.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you for your time. That was Steve Brooks, and for the Magic Word, this is Scotty out. All right, well, I just kind of got in the lobby, and this was interesting. I just happened to run into my friend, Arthur Emerson. Hey, Arthur, how are you?
Fine, Zan, yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you,
sir.
Good
news.
I'm glad to see you here. I knew I was going to see you, obviously, at the TAOM convention just in a few short weeks.
Good Lord willing, and the Creek Indians don't rise, yes.
That's right, and I'm excited that you're going to be our speaker. You're going to talk about Emerson
West. I look
forward
to that. I've put together an unusual program, so we hope we have an unusual audience.
Yes, and for those of you who are listening out in the podcast world, the name Arthur Emerson should resonate, of course, with the Emerson and West line, and that was a lot of Packatrix. Most famously, I guess, was the Color Monty.
Color Monty did...
How many of those did you sell, do you think?
50,000 on the magic market and 500,000 in the commercial market.
500,000, half a million in the commercial. Now, you say the commercial market, that was, what, like...
Coca-Cola orders it for themselves.
Oh, I see. Interesting. And was that obviously your biggest seller? I say obviously.
It was the biggest seller. Forget the commercial market entirely. Amongst magicians, Color Monty was number one. 8-Ball was number two.
That's a good trick, yeah. How the whole trick?
Gypsy Curse was number three.
Gypsy Curse, yeah.
Well, the whole thing is my favorite.
I like it.
I just like a play on words.
Yes.
And that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
The best trick that I ever did was probably the whole thing, and the best trick that West did was Wild Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
Which
that was like a wild card routine.
It's two wild cards done simultaneously.
Okay. What was your and his creative spark? I mean, what was it that, how'd you come up with the different ideas? Did you have one idea and you built on that? I mean, like the Wild Wild West? Or
we were a Gilbert and Sullivan.
Okay.
We're exact opposites in everything. I do sleight of tongue, he does sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the marriage that worked.
Yeah.
In that when it came to slights he wanted to play with, we could sit down and do it together. When it came down to stories, I wanted to see if we could put an illustration to the story, which is what the magic was.
Yeah. That's what makes it entertaining, the presentation.
That's how it went, sure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you could do them all with playing cards.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have made any money.
That's right. Everybody's got playing cards. You need to put some pictures on the cards.
You've got to put little mice on one and little ham and eggs on another.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And for how long, how many years were you partners?
30 years to the day.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then you just decided you're going to dissolve the partnership?
67 and 97, Larry dies.
Hmm.
And I got to the point where I was doing most of it alone, and the big market was overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And I got sick and tired of carrying a 125-pound fiberboard case around the world.
Yeah.
I was at the Blackpool Convention in 97. And the little black box that I worked up, I left on the table and walked away.
That was it.
That's
never
it.
Looked back then.
Nope.
That was the end of your dealer days.
Yep.
Now, you were past president of the Texas Association of Magicians. What year was that in Fort Worth?
2002.
In two, yep. And, of course, we're going to be having our convention coming up again over Labor Day weekend, which for those of you overseas who may not know what Labor Day is, that's when people work. No, it's labor. No, that is, it's a holiday we have over the first weekend of September.
And Fort Worth will have theirs the year after.
This year is Dallas, and next year is going to be in Fort Worth.
In Fort Worth.
And the president's going to be who?
Bill Irwin.
Bill Irwin, okay.
Yeah.
This year's Mark Jensen there. And looks like we should have a good convention, so kind of promote that as well. Just go to www.taom2013.com, I believe is what it is. Arthur, before we wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you is, what is your magic word? What is your, not like necessarily abracadabra, you know, that you would use in a show, but something that might be your life motto, or what do you live by? What is your...
It's not really in a word. it's in a phrase. I'll give you the phrase. Okay?
Yes.
If yesterday is the past and tomorrow is the future, today is a gift. And that's why they call it the present.
I like that. Very good. Very good thought. From Arthur Emerson and from the floor over here at Magic Live in New Orleans, Las Vegas, Scotty out.
Pretty good.
All right, well, I just came around the corner and ran into Trig Burridge, and he was telling me about the First Trick filming. It's a documentary, apparently, that's going on. I forgot this was something that Mark Kornhauser was working on, and he was wearing a little button, and so I said, go around the corner, and that's where you show them. So I'm waiting in line right now. They're doing some filming. It's in progress in a room right now next to the registration area. And there was a little trick that my father showed me many years ago that was my first trick that I remember learning, and I was going to pass this on to the documentary. So we'll see when and where this shows up and if you guys get to see this. But it's kind of a cool little thing that you do with a shoelace, or in this case, I'm just going to do it impromptu with my lanyard that is around my neck with my registration badge on there. Anyhow, that's kind of it for right now. Scotty out. All right, well, we're on the inside over here. I'm getting ready to show Mark my trick, and then I'm with Mark Kornhauser right now. We're getting ready. Hey there, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. We're just about to start. This is the pre.
Yes.
And
so I'll kind of place over by your coffee mug, then, so that way it won't
okay.
be quite so...
Will it pick up all right?
Well,
now, you know what? You can put it visible. It's okay if it's visible. We have no qualms about...
I'll just kind of...
That's fine there.
Leave that over there. That'd be fine, I think, that we can... Yeah, I think that'll be just fine. Yep. Okay.
All right. Good.
Hey. How are you?
Good.
Good.
All right. Scott.
Wait.
Oh, wait. We're gonna do that.
Yeah, I got a slate and I got to adjust here.
Do a slate, okay? Got the white balance.
Height adjustment.
Yeah, okay. we're on automatic on this.
Okay. How many of these have you done so far?
13 or 14.
And it just got
like
started.
16 or 17,
oh, yeah. 16 or 17 now. Yeah. We're gonna do 100.
And then you're cutting it off.
So no, we're not going to cut it off. No. We're not.
You can try to get as many as you can.
As many as we can, but I think we're shooting for 100.
And the idea is to get rid of the first trick that you learned.
The idea is to go back in time and try to uncover the earliest experiences that magicians had, because in many cases it was a powerful experience and it lasted all their lives.
That's true.
And we also want to see the first trick they learned, because if that first trick was what kept them going and inspired them, then it would probably be good for some other beginner to learn. Those would be good first tricks. So I'm a big believer that the first trick is an opportunity for kids to learn bigger lessons. And I think that what we're seeing here is... people talking not only about the mechanics of this first trick, but how important it was to them and what they got out of it.
What do you mean, bigger things? Are you talking about the philosophy of life?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And not just a trick, you know.
Yes, of course. I mean, look, when you ask people, they say, okay, here's this string trick or whatever, they do that. And then the next thing you know, when you say, well, I will ask you, what is it you learned? It always generalizes to something very broad.
Right.
I learned about the power of knowledge. I learned about the joy of giving joy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the valuable lessons that people learn.
Oh, that's a good point.
Even from their first trick.
Yeah. So it's not just the mechanics of the trick, but it's the philosophy of life that they learned from that or
something. Even if they don't intellectually grasp it, they are learning that.
It's like in golf, you know, that I remember going to the British Open in 1972 and seeing Lee Trevino that just shanked a shot. I mean, he didn't go 50 yards. You know, he looked at it. You know, for just a minute, and he just set the club down, didn't throw it, just handed it to his caddy, walked down, you know, and the next one he went on the green. Long story short, he won the British Open that year. Mm-hmm. I learned something from that, not as a golfer, but as a human being, is that don't let these little, you know, short drives in life define your future.
Yeah.
And that you're going to be able to excel and to achieve greater things if you just don't worry about the past, but you learn from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. And you learn that from magic as well.
And as Matt, and that's precisely right. So there are a lot of things you can learn from a bad performance or something that was a mishandling of an audience volunteer, a spectator, somebody that is perhaps working with an agent, a bad situation that you just, you know, can grow from.
Mm-hmm. When and where did you start magic?
Well, I had a magic kit, and like most everybody else, obviously had a.
A lot of people did, but not yet.
But I, you know, I showed the kids in the neighborhood.
Your parents gave it to you?
They did, yeah.
How old were you?
I was about 8 years old.
Okay.
I'm from Southern Illinois, and they came back from St. Louis, gave me this little Sneaky Pete magic show.
Sneaky Pete magic kit?
Yeah, that was one magic kit. Yeah. You cut the girl in half with this little sword and everything, and had a little ring box and everything. It was kind of cool. Still got it at home. I found it
the
a long
original
time ago.
Sneaky Pete box.
Yes.
That's great.
And so I, as I said, charged everybody in the neighborhood about a nickel apiece. And after I ran out of friends, it's a small town about, you know, about a small farming community, that I kind of forgot about it. And I didn't realize that there was I could use the library as a source. So it wasn't until many years later, and I was a scoutmaster, and there was an older scoutmaster who showed me some rope tricks. And one thing kind of led to another because I was then doing a rope trick to get people's attention there at the troop meetings because they would pay attention, and I thought, well, this is a powerful tool. One thing kind of led to another. I was transferred then from Illinois to Tulsa. I was in the energy business, and then I took a class that was in the junior college on magic. And so I started doing some shows.
In what
birthday
city was this?
Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was a 6-week class. Sandy Rhodes was the teacher at the junior college, and it was 2 hours each Wednesday night for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. It would be a series of each week would be something different. When I moved from Tulsa to Midland, Texas, I started teaching a very similar class then at the local college, both Midland and Odessa colleges, for about 3.5 years. My intent was to try to develop a club to try to get a ring formed out there. So I did the same thing, in which that I had, you know, people who took the class, we talk about cards 1 week, we, you know, it's close up, we talk about stage, we talk about use of illusions, mentalism, and different, you know, things each 6 weeks. But people had to come to the class, you know, from something that they had learned from the books that they had studied. And then we'd talk about presentation, and everybody would perform for each other, because I think that this is a performing art. I've always said a magician who's not working is only fooling himself. And so I think it's important, you know, as Bob Lund, you know, the great curator of the American Museum of Magic years ago, who was talking about that, he didn't see himself as a magician, but he was really kind of a collector. He was a curator, again, of the arcane kinds of things that people could appreciate, you know, for many years to come. And he would just keep it for a while, you know, and then it's going to be passed on to someone else. You know, then Jay Marshall had it, and each person's kind of passing it on. Mm-hmm. Well, I continued anyhow in working with magic. And then from there, started working birthday parties, of course, and then moved to Omaha, Nebraska, started working restaurants, and then moved to Houston. I became one of the house magicians at the Magic Island. And because of the size of Houston, it was just too large of a city for me. I felt like to travel to go do a birthday party, I'd rather, you know, get a lot more money for, you know, if I was going to be traveling and, you know, make it more worth my time. So I moved away from the birthday parties, and that I have, you know, over the last 20 years, and then really focused more on the corporate market. And then I retired early, but when I was 55, I decided, you know, I always wanted to go work cruise ships and retire at 55. I did, and I did. Started working on some cruises, and I've done lots of trade shows, and that's really kind of the market that I
got. So this all, your history in magic goes way back to 7 years old, 8 years old. Is there some trick from back then that really kind of like that was the you could think of as the first trick that
I can, Mark, and I want to share that with you. This was something, you know, of course, we got our name badges here from Magic Live, and that I don't really don't have. I want to set down the microphone over here for just a minute. And this is going to use then the lanyard that came with me. Now, my father showed this to me.
All right.
And
you were how old when this happened?
I had to be about the same. I was probably about 7 years
very
old.
Very early days.
That's
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, just imagine, I guess this was going to be then a string. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, I remember him showing me, you know, where he'd have, you know, he would lick this in order to kind of, you know, go right through the eye of the needle. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to go through so quickly and then grab it on the other end and pull it right on through, you know. And it's difficult to grab, you know, so that he said that the hand is quicker than the eye. And so he kind of licked this and kind of go just right on through just like that, just that quickly, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just kind of show you, it just amazed me how that he could kind of just kind of grab right, just kind of if he can, Gonna make sure you're gonna get that right up to the right, size. Gonna have to go right through. So if I can, get that going right on through.
Yeah, that's good.
It impressed me not only as a 7-year-old or 8-year-old, but it was something that whenever I started doing some close up and I was working in restaurants, this was one of the first things that I did.
Because you were comfortable with it. It was one. And it's an unusual trick, really. It's a little bit unusual.
Some other people have shown the other kinds of things whatever. But this was something that my father showed me. He was a scoutmaster himself, which is why I kind of, I guess, followed in his footsteps.
And that may have been the trick he used to get people's attention and stuff
That's right. Yeah. So one thing kind of led to another. And, of course, with when you're working with the Boy Scouts, you always have a hank of rope handy. They used to call it Henry. You get to know it better, you call it Hank, But anyhow, I digress. So the idea is, this is a nice little thing. It's threading the needle.
Can you show us? That was a great trick.
Okay. Well, thank you. Let me show you this thing. Now, the idea is, of course, that just using a string, a rope, a thread is too thin, but you're just wrapping it around your thumb. Now, it's coming towards you, so it's going anti-clockwise, they'd say in England, or counterclockwise this way. Then the last one, you just turn it like this. Now, so you have this. Now, this other part that's going to be in your left side, in other words, that whenever you put this then mark like this, going up over here, you're actually grabbing the other one. You're not grabbing the same one, you're grabbing the other one, because as this is going through, you're pulling that through this end, and it's going right straight up. There.
Yes.
Let me show that. The nice thing is it's repeatable. As many times as you have that wrapped around there, when it's going to be going through, it's kind of a bad background, I guess, for you to see it. Maybe I put it in front of your shirt, which is this way that it goes right through, but actually your finger's going right through, so it slides like this. So it looks like that again.
Yeah.
This kind of course. This one's getting longer and this is getting shorter. It's kind of like a cut and restored rope. It gets shorter all the time. Yeah. Well, same thing with dove magicians, I guess. They get skinnier.
Yeah.
But the idea is you just kind of go right on through, and so you pull that right through just like that.
That's great.
So one more time.
That's a fooler.
That just kind of goes around this way.
Yeah.
Several times, and then the last time, so it's about even. And as you're talking, you just misdirect. Again, it's time misdirection, like with a cross-cut force or something. And then whenever you're ready, that just goes right on through, just right like this. You're explaining about how difficult it is to go through and grab it at the other side and taking all the time and explaining that. And then if they try it, of course, they can't do it.
But a magician can. Seen it. And yet another first trick that I've never seen.
There you go, my first
amazing
trick.
That's all right, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
So a lifetime of magic.
Yes.
What's is there something about magic that you love? What's the thing that you love the most?
I do love entertaining people. I do love the applause. I like it when people afterwards have just. I just worked at the Magic Castle a couple weeks ago in the close-up room, and I was putting things up, and the guy came in and said, "You have some fans out here." And I said, "Really?" He came out, and they said, "Well, we want to take a picture." Never met them before, and it's, we got to go outside in the lobby. And it's things like that. It's just, I have touched someone's life, such that they have stories they can go back and tell in a positive way. I think, as a Christian, I try to do things that, in my belief, in my faith, that is going to be and leave a positive impression. We have children who should be our legacy. Those are the only good things that we're going to be having in life that are going to outlast us and our magic and whatever else. Good memories are those things that we as magicians have to try to achieve every day, and we try to create something that will appear to be a minor miracle because people don't experience enough joy in their lives. I think that there are enough problems that everyone has with, your work, your health, so many different issues that are problems. If you can give a little bit of a joy, like when I'm at the restaurant and entertaining somebody, or if as the after dinner speaker and the entertainer to make people laugh and applaud, they go home and can talk about that. I'm in a trade show and I do my closest pothole trick, with a business card. The guy will come back then the next year, pull it out of his wallet and say, "Hey, would you show Sam here? This is just you punched a hole in this card, And they carry that around. They carry those stories with them. And other things that when I used to be in the energy business and I would go and show a client, this was, everybody can tell a joke, but not everybody can do magic. So that was one thing that kind of set me apart. So that way that they liked for me to come as opposed to everybody else like, "Oh, there's another salesman. There's somebody coming and, that we don't want to see him." But I can see a smile on their face whenever that I would come in. I'd sometimes see some little thing that I had left, like a frog that I'd folded it from a card or something and send this guy's computer that I did 6 months ago the last time I was in his office or something, you know. So it's that kind of joy, I think, that I like to live for, is thinking that I have some sort of a legacy or something that people are going to remember and remember in a positive way.
And I think that's how it works.
And we get to meet a lot of people. I think it's just a joy to travel anywhere in the world, you know, and this is just such I was just talking with Marvin Roy just earlier this evening, and he was just saying that this is such a great fraternity of magicians in which that we care about what we do and each other. And so I asked him, you know, what is your magic word? And he said, love. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to love what you do, and I think that that's very well said. Speaking of which, that my magic podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast. What's your magic word then, Mark?
I'm going to go with love.
I will go with plagiarism.
Well, Marvin can't be wrong.
That's right. Exactly right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a pleasure.
And because you were such a good guest, what do we have for him, Chris? Well, look at this. The potentially invaluable First Trick Contributor pin.
Wow. For my very own?
For you.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's just the best.
Yeah.
I'm official now. I'm in the club. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate your time. It's been great.
No, thank you. That was great. Really terrific.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, there's Mark Kornhauser, Scott Wilson, and Scotty out. Hi, Misty. How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Going to be doing a podcast. So
yeah.
We've got this is. I got Tyler Knight and Misty. Good to see you guys over here. Then
awesome.
So you're just here for the day. So then you're
today and tomorrow.
Today and then you're going here tomorrow.
Tomorrow we take a flight to Disney. We're working on the Disney Fantasy right now.
Okay. This makes how many years for the Fantasy?
Well, we've been doing cruises. You've been doing cruises for like I don't know a dozen years. But Disney is just this year.
Just this year.
I was
going to
say because I was asked about Disney in particular because I thought so. This is the Fantasy? Because that's a newer ship, isn't it?
That's the newest
the
ship.
One.
Newest one they have. It's got all the bells and whistles.
Who's got this? What?
It's got all the bells and whistles. It's got everything.
They said missiles.
It does have fireworks on.
Oh, so is that right?
It is considered an armed vessel or something like that.
The only cruise line to have fireworks.
Yeah, so it's a...
So like at certain times or different ports, what you're out to see or what?
They have a big pirate
night, yes. And they shoot fireworks
off. Jack Sparrow does like a play type thing, and then it's intertwined with it, and then the fireworks apparently shoot from his glove. But it's really cool.
It's like a big battle at sea.
Yeah.
So
at sea?
Cool.
Yes, at sea.
They don't bring up another ship or something. They kind of go swing across.
No.
Kind of cool.
But they do swing down from the Jack Sparrow repels from the smokestack, so it's pretty cool.
Now, as far as Disney, I assume there are a lot of kids. You know,
yes, it's a lot of kids there.
Yeah, so they have Disney characters as
all
well?
All the place,
all the time.
All the princesses and a lot of characters. Mickey and Minnie are there. And
what do they do during the daytime? I mean, do they have like different workshops and things?
No, they just are there to be the characters.
He's saying what did the passengers do?
Oh,
the passengers. I mean, are they taking
so
workshops?
Much to do. There's so many activities. They can come to our show. We do a lot of kids shows. And we do an adult show. We do a big illusion show. But
they have a movie theater on board, too, and they do first-run movies. So, like, whenever Monsters University came out, you were watching that the very first day.
Right.
And they have the pool, and I mean, there's endless
spas
stuff.
And you
they have a water slide roller coaster thing. It's awesome.
You can play golf up on the deck. There's everything. I mean, it's amazing.
A few years ago, when I first started to work at a cruise, that the agent had called me about working at Disney Cruise. Like, I got a trade show that I've already was booked 6 months. As you know, sometimes they'll call you. It's like, can you be in Alexandria like next week?
Right.
You know, and I have a thing. You know, but I always thought that would be the cool ship to work. It'd be so much fun.
It is
because
awesome.
they're out there to have fun. There are a lot of kids, and then parents are there to have fun, and so.
And we even get to do different kinds of shows too, because we do our theater show, which in the theater seats of about 1,500 people or close to 2,000, and that's with the illusions, and it's a mixed family audience. But we also do a show just for the adults in the nightclub.
In the evening.
Mm-hmm, at like 11 o'clock at night. It's cabaret style, so we can.
How much smaller is that room?
It's a nightclub. It's about 200 seats.
I think maybe 200 or 300 seats.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's nice to be able to do a completely different kind of magic.
Sure.
And then we also do a kids show as well during the day.
A kids show with the parents there.
Yes.
So that's what I was asking as far as like activities for the kids. I was thinking there might be some sort of a dress up or something that they do
they have kids clubs with
the princes.
With like 30 different what are the people called?
Youth staff.
Youth staff. And they keep them entertained all the time.
Yeah. They have games and everything to do up there. looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's
like a big talking to John Armstrong. He's involved in was involved in some of the creative stuff with their game rooms. The new ship is being on the Magic next year. They're redoing it and they're making all the Marvel characters from the comics.
Oh, sure.
In their kids
from
book.
The Avengers.
The Avengers, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they have all kinds of stuff.
Now, is Magic one of the Disney's or is that
that's Disney's?
That is
well.
Disney's.
There's only four ships.
Okay.
They have the Magic. They have the Dream. They have the Fantasy
and
the Wonder.
Wonder. Okay. For some reason, I was thinking that was a Carnival line.
Yeah, I think there is another one. They have one called the Magic as well, I believe.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's a different line.
Different line. Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to go on
Carnival.
You want to get all so confused.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's kind of like Walmart versus.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you know, there's something for everybody.
Sure,
I mean,
of course.
If you want
to
go
every
for
budget.
A quick break,
yeah.
Every budget.
Just to, you know, to the Caribbean,
yeah.
Then that's.
So can you kind of see yourselves doing this for a long number of years now?
It's
so?
Pretty been. It's been a long number of years already.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They just bought our house, so it's going to be hard to turn it down.
We have a great time working the ships. It's it's a nice venue. We do try to do other things as much as possible when we're back in Vegas or, you know, L.A. But
we have a second set of Illusions that we keep at home so that in between the ship stuff we can do other venues. Last fall we were here in town in Vegas in World Stars of Magic, and then this past spring we actually went to Dubai and mm-hmm. performed at the World Trade Center there with the V Variety Show.
Yep.
And that was with a second set of Illusions. Meanwhile, the other props were on the ships. So.
Yeah.
So we're trying to just stay open to anything new.
Wow.
But the ships are definitely our bread and butter. I mean, they take care
sure.
of us the best. So.
That's kind of what Sean Farquhar was telling me, you know,
exactly.
for so many years, and then at some point, you know, that's like, okay, I'm going to go home and kind of retire. And
but I love the travel right now. So. I'm not sick
oh,
of it.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
We've been to like 70 different countries all over the world.
I'm going back to Europe next summer. I'm excited.
That was what I always was planning on doing. My thought was, you know, I want to retire early and go do this, and so I did. But then I took my wife with me, and she didn't enjoy it. And so she said, well, this is your dream, not mine. So couldn't you tell me, like, the last 20 years, you know, that's what I've been building toward. Okay, I'll do something else then, you know.
Yeah, we're lucky that we get to do this together.
And you enjoy it and love it. Yeah.
Yep.
We're with each other every day, 24 hours a day.
Some people can't do that, but you guys are just getting started.
We've been together like 11 years.
11 years now, yeah.
Wow, I can't even take wallpaper off together. You know, just a couple hours, you know.
Works for us.
Well, thank you very much. And good luck. I'll tell you what, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. What is your magic word?
It's going to be tough.
What's your philosophy of life? What is your motto? What do you live by? What is important to you?
What is important to me? It's have fun and living the dream here.
Love it. That's two words.
You know, it's funny because that was kind of what I was talking to Marvin Roy. I said, what's your word? He said, love.
Yeah.
You know,
if you love what you do, you're not ever going
to. That's right.
Keep doing this forever, then.
Yeah, that's right. You will. Thank you very much. Appreciate
awesome.
It, Missy. Thanks, Tyler.
Kyle.
Okay.
Oh, nobody.
Kyle. Oh, sorry.
Oh, you know me old.
Oh, yes, Tyler. Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's his first name.
My first name.
Okay.
But he goes by Kyle.
Tyler Knight is a porn star that's really big.
Oh,
so.
I remember you telling me that. That's why you decided to go with the.
Yeah, that's always my middle name forever. So.
So on
yeah,
stage,
yeah, because back in Magic
Battle. That was different. We know. We go way
back. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad everything's going well
yes,
for you
good.
As well.
Yep,
so
it is. Thanks again.
Hey, say hi to Scott if you see us. See him around. I haven't talked to him forever. I really hope he's doing well.
He's doing great.
He really gave me my first, you know, start with everything.
Yep.
So
Scott Hollingsworth did, you know, a lot of
people.
Yep. He's been a great director, you know, there at Magic Island and everything. Then too.
Yeah, we think of him often. So I wish he never gets.
I never get to meet him, but I've heard stories.
Well, come through Houston sometime.
I want to. I wish he was still around.
Well, we put you up. We'll find room and board for you. You just kind of come through if you got to have it pass through Galveston or something.
We used to perform on trips out of Galveston. We had so much fun.
Yeah.
Best audiences in the world, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm a Mississippi girl, though. You know, I'm a Southern girl.
Well, that's right. Next, near Texas. That's good. Thank you. See you. Okay. For the magic word, Scotty out. That because I do daily podcasts.
Hi.
Yeah, you don't have to be so close. It picks
okay.
up everything.
Oh, it's one of.
That's right. It's essentially Mike.
All the voice in there.
It's
all the words.
He's getting it right now. In
what?
Fact, you see the red light. That means that we're recording them now. That's okay.
Wait, so all the words are inside.
Eat.
Seriously.
All the words. Ooh. That's right. You're
butter
blonde.
Butter gun.
You're
red
blonde.
Leather, yellow leather. Peter Piper picked up.
I apologize.
Pepper.
You probably have real questions.
Ooh, that is good.
Yes.
I don't have real questions. Oh. So thanks a lot for coming. I hope you enjoyed this evening. over here that I've got David Hinken. Don't want to talk about the famous clown that you.
No,
from time to time over there. Trig Burridge from Dallas, Texas.
Trig Watson.
Watson, I'm sorry.
Oh.
from Dallas.
Burridge.
From a buddy of mine. And Kristen Lampkin.
Yes. Yeah,
okay. Thank you guys very much for being here. So that, yes, this is the podcast, so the Magic Word. I do daily updates, actually, from conventions. I just was in Phoenix, and so now I've been talking with a bunch of folks over here, and so as to kind of what's going on. So nothing has happened except just getting our name badges, and I see you guys have already got...
The light sort of washes you out a little bit, but you
I kind of have a halo.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy, you really do. Well, see, you need to use more makeup. See, you'd really more like this. There you go.
I have my bags packed.
Yeah, you've done that once or twice.
Yeah, the bags under your eyes. I see. Yeah. That's too, David.
That's what happens when you get in at 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's so surreal to be back at the Orleans and just walk down the hall and see everyone and hi.
Yes.
It's always just like the first hour is always what's so exciting.
Because you, for any convention, I guess, you know, everybody gets here early waiting for the first thing to happen.
Absolutely. And these are people who I haven't seen a lot of these people in years, and it's so refreshing to come back and see everybody.
So where have you been? You've been out in L.A.?
I've been in L.A., yep. And I've been in Vegas for the past 4 months.
Okay. You're working with?
Chris.
Yes.
Yes.
And so, and Chris Angel, by the way.
And that's been really wonderful.
Yep.
And so it's great to hang out with Trig, and I'm looking across the room and seeing Dave Regal and Paul Wilson and
everybody.
Yeah, just kind of all up and down here. Yeah, I was just talking, had lunch with Vaynerchuk earlier this week, and he was telling me, you know,
Vanny's my buddy.
Yeah.
Well, he's become like my dad.
More like a dad, I was going to say.
He's become my dad.
Dada check,
exactly.
I like that, Dada check.
I have to go Dada-check. Rescue Sterling from the jail, the check-in jail. Apparently, he somehow got registered in my
Sterling
room.
Sterling Deets is here.
So,
and he's an award winner also, just like you.
Yes.
Yeah, Sterling's got a very good act as well.
Yeah. He gets the prize. He gets the award for the awards.
Yeah.
So, yep.
I'll let you run. I'm going to ask Chris and then another couple of questions.
Great.
See you in a bit. And we'll talk to you then later, Trey. Okay, David.
All right.
Take care. We'll stand over here in the middle then. So I know you've been working then with Chris, and that when we were in Phoenix, we had the IBM convention and saw the movie that, what was it called? That you were in?
Make Believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was a fun documentary. And,
it was.
I had seen that, I think, on HBO. It was on one of the...
I think it was on Showtime.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So
it came out in 2010.
And you were a junior at that time.
Yes.
So that's under 18, or what is it?
Under 21.
Under 21.
I was 17 when we shot.
Okay.
And turned 18 in the middle of it. So that's it's a fun snapshot of a year of my life.
Did you continue to compete after that, or did you compete before that? Or?
I've done a few competitions since then, but nothing all too much. I mean, I pretty much was too old at that point, because I think 18 is a cutoff date.
And you didn't want to compete as a senior?
I could.
Certainly. And you're one of the youngest members, I guess, of the Magic Castles group,
yes,
is that
I'm
correct?
Yes, currently the youngest member of the adult castle, I was the youngest member of the junior program.
Okay. And what was that like? I mean, you were working with Diana Zimmerman, I guess, had gotten you interested way back when?
I met Diana through the junior program.
Okay.
And I've been interested in magic for, you know, so many years. I was always involved in performance growing up, and finally realized, actually it was when I went to the Magic Castle for the first time for my 10th birthday.
Yeah.
That's when I sort of first realized, like, wait a minute, this is actually a viable endeavor. This is not
people
just...
make a career out of it.
Right. This is not just pushing a button or flipping a lever, but there's so much more to this.
Right.
And I think that's when I really got hooked, because it was something that you could completely dive into, focus on, fret over, and it's consumed me, and now it's my whole life.
Well, let me ask you about then your creative aspect. You know, what is it that is your creative chi? What is it that...
Oh, my gosh.
You've been working with Chris for a few months, and obviously, and then...
Yeah, I'd like to view myself as a treasure hunter, whether it be, you know, going through an old antique store or going across the beach and finding a special shell or even reading a book and finding an old concept that you haven't learned before.
Right.
I really feel myself to be that sort of curator, that treasure hunter. And so I find inspiration in so much.
You find things, you talk about old books, or you find like gems or pieces, or are you talking about literally some things like antique stores and whatnot?
All of the above. Both.
Okay.
I mean both, absolutely. I'm not even just magic books, but going through old, you know, old fiction or history books. I draw a lot from U.S. history in my more recent routines, and it's wonderful. You know, you just have to keep your eyes open, because it's not about waiting for inspiration to strike. It's about having the right lens and the right attitude to find inspiration in everything.
In everything. So anything,
I think so.
So anything that you see, you're thinking, I could turn this into...
Not even turn it into... I mean, yes, turn it into a magic trick, but it makes you think of something that makes you think of something else, which, you know, it's just that little thread that can ultimately turn into something
really great.
Right.
And even if it's not a magic trick, it could be a new way to think about something, or you know, a new you know, sort of personality trait that you can adopt. Anything.
Yeah. Well, as a young person in magic and having started so early as you were and being involved with contests, etc., what words of advice do you often give to those aspiring young magicians?
I would have to say read, read, listen, listen. That's the most important thing.
Those are good.
So many, especially at a convention, there are so many sages here, so many people with amazing, invaluable words of wisdom.
Right.
And so, you know, I know, especially when you're starting off, my inclination was, I want to show everyone my tricks. I want to do this. I want to show this. I want to get this, buy that.
Sure.
But that's not the point. It's about finding those gems, talking to people, and really investing. In the same way, you know, you can, like, look through a book to learn a trick, but you can really dive in and read the book.
And opposed to a DVD.
Well, that's a whole other issue. But no, read and listen. That's my biggest piece of advice.
Well, that kind of leads to my final question.
Uh-huh.
It has to do, since my podcast is called the Magic Word Podcast, what is your magic word?
My magic word?
Well, it could be, you know, not necessarily like abracadabra, but something. It could be like something that you live by, your philosophy of life, your motto, you know, what is important to you.
Oh, I really think it's paying attention, focus, and like I said, finding inspiration in everything.
Yeah, just looking
discover,
around.
Yeah, discover.
Oh, I love that.
Discover.
No one said that yet.
Oh, how about that?
That's original. See, you are creating. Very good. I was Kristen Lambert.
Thank you guys very much.
Appreciate your time.
Scott.
Okay, you're welcome. And for the magic word, Scotty out. Well, it's getting not really towards the end of the evening, but the welcome party is kind of moved in with the ice cream and sundaes, and the dealer's fair has opened. And as usual, you get a special deal that buy $25 worth of stuff, and then you're going to be able to get some raffle ticket, which are going to be giving away some fabulous prizes. And about every 15 minutes or so, they will do a countdown and announce somebody's name. But I was able to get just a few minutes at least with the organizer, Stan Allen. Hello, Mr. Allen. How are you, Stan?
I'm fine, thank you.
Are you really?
Yeah, sure.
So when's the last time you got at least 10 minutes of sleep?
I'm not sure what sleep is anymore.
You know, as a concept, I guess, not really something that people do. And how's the family doing in all this?
Family seems to be doing fine.
Yes, because I see them all over the place, too. They're very busy.
It's kind of a reverse nepotism. My kids don't sponge off me. I sponge off my kids.
You use them.
I use them.
Yeah.
What good is having these kids if you can't use them?
Well, you know, I always thought, as a parent, that they were good, first of all, for mowing the yard. It's, you know, so that way they kind of help you with the yard work and everything. I hadn't thought about it, like, from your standpoint, get them to run a convention. You know, so they do all the
Well,
chairman
let's not
work.
Tip them off.
Okay, they won't listen to this. So, how's everything going? How many people have they got registered for this year compared to last time?
I'm not sure because I haven't heard numbers today, but we were counting everybody, presenters and dealers,
talent,
and everybody. I think we're closing in on 1,500, if not over it.
Well, this is the seminal event of not just the year, but, you know.
It's the biggest thing we've ever done.
Is it?
Yes.
So in the past, I want to say it was like 1,200 or something
like
that?
Well, we started at 700.
Yeah.
And then we have now doubled it.
We have a great relationship with the Orleans over here. It seems like that they enjoy, you know, having this convention.
Sure. Things are going good. We're getting a little big for them.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what we'll do. We might just limit registration, or we might... You never know.
So are they going to be having, then, two shows in the evenings, kind of like we had from before, in order to make sure that everybody gets to see the
same
show?
Absolutely. The theater seats 800 people,
right.
So theoretically we have 1,600 seats in the theater, because we do everything twice.
And you're going to have any room for public at all to sell any tickets?
We have a very small amount of public.
When they're out, they're out.
About 50 tickets, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really... Our shows aren't designed for the public so much.
And the dealer's fair, one of the exciting things it seems like that you do every time is, of course, make sure that everybody's introducing some new product. Isn't that right?
You know what? We have we encourage that.
Okay.
And we promote that. And the guys and gals, they've been terrific about it. So I don't know, are we becoming the Super Bowl where they reveal new things at that thing? So, yeah, it's great.
Well, that was something that somebody had mentioned to me earlier. You know, they kind of liked it before, where that we would be given each day the program for what's going to happen. So we really don't know. It's kind of like turning the page of the magazine. You don't know what's going to happen. But this time we got the sneak preview. Plus, you did the electronic schedule.
Yeah, we have the electronic schedule, and we found people, they like surprises, but they want to be treated as adults, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make decisions if we go to something or we don't. So we compromise. We don't tell you who's on the shows, But we will tell you who the speakers are on the general present, the mm-hmm. general sessions, and we spell out clearly what the focus sessions are.
Right.
So we compromise a little.
I saw somebody on the Twitter feed saying something about getting ready for a TED Talk. I guess so. They got something kind of like that.
I don't know.
You don't know anything about that yet.
No, I don't know anything about a TED Talk. I always laugh a little bit because they, you know, people say, you know, it's like TED. Conventions are, that's the buzzword now.
Yeah.
Our talks are like TED. They're TED-like talks.
Yes.
You know, I think we were doing these talks 10 years before TED,
before TED came along. Born. Yeah.
You know, so I just, that just makes me laugh a little bit.
So what is different this time that they haven't done in the past?
Well, we've tried to improve things as far as registration and badges and
much
everything.
Cleaner, much faster.
Cleaner, much faster. And when you're registering that many people in a very small amount of time. But we're learning. We did a soft opening Saturday night for an hour and then put our heads back together and changed a few things and learned a little bit more. Also, this time, we're not necessarily doing a lot of high concept things. We're just trying to do things better. And we're also going international.
What does that mean?
We have more international acts than we ever have before.
Oh, on the bill. Okay.
On the bill. You take our close-up show, we have one American and he's a transplant.
Okay.
So everybody else is from overseas.
Yeah.
And our stage show, I think, has two Americans over the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So we're really going, international and... yeah, so we're sticking our neck out. We have some talks from people that we go, well, we don't know how this is going to go.
Yeah,
you know. So sometimes you win, sometimes you don't.
But you got to toss the dice.
Well,
that's why this is Vegas. You know,
that's the fun thing. People tell us over and over and over again that they come to Magic Live to see us take risks.
Right.
And they say we'd rather see you take a risk, and it didn't quite work out to the best, than just come to another convention with another show. Blah blah.
Because I know you're going to try something.
They'd rather see us try something.
Right.
So we try
something.
That's
a good philosophy. Maybe that's what most conventions should do in order to thrive in the future.
Well, I think they should, but, you know, a lot of conventions have, you know, they have a mindset, I guess, that their customers don't want change.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, every time we change something, we get complaints from people. Why don't you just do it the way you did it last year?
Yeah.
And quite honestly, it's just not fun.
Yeah.
To do it the
We've
same
done
way
that.
We did it
yeah.
last year. Exactly. And so, you know, I just wish, you know, I mean, and I understand it. The IBM has been around a long time. They do things a certain way. The SAM has been around a long time.
Yeah.
They do certain
And they
things.
Got a certain base of people who come.
A certain
if you
base and
book
enjoy
a blue
that.
Dog, they'll
and,
show up.
You know, 4Fs, it has a base of people that come every single
sure.
year. And you can experiment a little, but if, you know, if you went in and took those bases and threw out the entire convention, you know, wow.
Yeah.
Now, us, on the other hand, people expect us to do something wild and crazy. So if we don't, then we disappoint.
Yeah. You don't want to make a clone. You want to do some brain surgery and make something, change the DNA and everything, make a change.
Well, we just
tweak here and there.
Yeah, we just feel that different. We're trying to do things different every
yeah.
time.
Every time. Well, you know, one thing that seems to be a hit, of course, are the name badges with the pictures, you know, the cover picture. That's just a great thing. And I remember kind of had that was the only negative I remember
Big
from last time.
Last year.
But this year, man, it was smooth. They were printing them out just like that. I never saw a long line. So,
well, that's what we do. We usually pick two or three things every year where we say it wasn't as good last year as we thought it could be.
How can that be improved? What went wrong?
We also ask our people. We ask them to tell us three things we did well and three things we could have done a lot better.
And they respond.
Oh, my God, they respond. Yes, they do. And you know what's funny is we had a disaster with badges last year. Big meltdown. And yet, very few people even mentioned it other in passing. Yeah, well, you know about the disaster with the badges. So here's what you should be thinking about.
Yeah, that was the obvious one. Yeah
they figured that we're going to fix that one, and we did.
Yeah.
But we pick a couple things every year. One of the things we picked this year was our final night party.
Okay.
Our last night party, a lot of people will go ahead and, I'll go out and see a show instead of coming to the final night party. It'd be a big mistake this year.
We'll just leave it at that.
We'll just leave it at that.
Make sure that if you're listening to this... and you're still at the convention, that you'll make sure to...
Go to the finally
go
party.
Go to the final, finally party.
It's called the finally party, yeah. It's
okay.
The last
page it's the last
magazine.
Thing. Exactly. Yeah.
So it's our last thing, and it's...
Yeah, because usually I know you have the pictures from the magazines in the past that have been over there. And some of the others may be different this year, but I know...
We're doing a lot of that, but we have what I consider to be the ultimate finally.
I am seeing these goosebumps. I'm getting excited just thinking about, because I know you're going to try something kind of, because you got a good crew of people. Speaking of who are some of your consultants? Who are the guys like Rory and some of the guys who are helping?
Well, Rory Johnston has been with me all along, and we have more repeat people this year than we've ever had
on staff.
Doing the same jobs where, you know, Stacy Jones handles our hotel liaison, and my daughter Christy handles the magic shop, and Katie handles registration, Stephen handles all our AV. And, you know, these are people that have done it 2 and 3 years now.
Got the experience.
They know what goes on here.
Yeah. You
know? And so that really helps.
One of the highlights for me also from one of the past conventions was the Magic Museum that was, it just kind of came and went, you know. Is there anything kind of planned like that?
Nope.
Not this year, okay.
You know, what's funny is we immediately afterwards said, no, we won't do a museum again, because we felt Lupe Nielsen headed that up last time.
Yeah.
And we felt that she did about as good a job as could be done with it. It was fantastic.
So yeah.
And we got very lucky with all the Mark Wilson stuff and the Lance Burton stuff.
David Copperfield,
my gosh.
Yeah.
And we just built this enormous thing for 6 hours.
Yeah.
And then the tents were packed up and the circus went away. But then we just said, you know what, that's not something we can repeat for a while. So probably at our 25th anniversary, we'll come back to it.
I like the concept. Not only do I love the museum, but I like the concept of having something that if people went to dinner and said, well, I'll see it later, they missed it.
Yeah.
You know.
I had to laugh. My favorite was
Brigadoon.
I heard a guy talking on the phone as he was heading towards the museum. And he was saying, yeah, I can meet you in the lobby in about 10 minutes. And at that point, he rounded the corner and he looked in the museum and he just scanned it over with his eyes. And then he said in the phone, you know what? It's going to be a while. I'll call you later. Bye.
Quick. Yeah.
And I thought that was a good thing.
Yeah. So. Well, I will talk with you as we get closer to the end of the convention and hopefully maybe after and get your assessment at that time. But I just wanted to get in touch with you today just to kind of get a prequel to what's going on. So far, it's been good.
Hope you have fun.
Thanks a lot, Stan. I'm Stan Allen. And for the Magic Podcast, Scotty out.
Tell me when you're...
All right, well, we're in the dealer's room over here then now on this first day. And I had to stop by to see a friend, formerly with H&R Magic Books, the now real-time Richard Hatch. Hey, Dick, how are you?
Hey, Scotty, how are you doing?
I'm excellent. Good to see you
the
again.
The former H of H&R.
That's
I don't know
right.
who's replaced me.
But
it should be...
Now it's Marshall.
M&R. Yeah, what's that? What is he? M&M.
Well, that's right. So, we're looking at some of the books you've got, and I've asked you what's
new. He's
got
a great selection, yeah.
Yeah, he does have. He's got a lot of stuff over here. But the Magic book, which was
the Big Toshin book, yeah.
Yes, which has now come out in paperback.
No, it is not paperback.
Well, I thought
in
it
fact,
was.
It's actually an upgrade. Let me grab one and talk to you about it. I'm going
to reach across over here and grab one. It's got a slipcover and everything.
It has
too.
A slipcover. So
yeah, the other one did not
I'm
have
sorry.
That.
We are ruining the whole display here. Bookshelves are toppling as we speak. All right, so it comes with a handsome slipcase.
Yeah.
It's got the nice dust jacket, still nicely
hardbound.
Yeah, so it looks very similar if you can't compare them side by side. If you put them side by side, you will see that this is very slightly shorter and not as wide.
It is more narrow, yeah.
But not by a lot. You know, maybe an inch or two there and an inch or two there.
Mm-hmm.
It also, this one, let's look it up exactly. This one has, I think, 540-some pages. The last pages may not be paginated. Here, 534. So I think it works out with the index to 540 pages, whereas the original big one had, I think, 620 pages or something like that, over 600. This one has, I think, 650 posters, playbills, illustrations. The original had 900. But none of the text, which is really the core of it, other than the, you know, the beauty
Beautiful.
Of it.
Yeah,
yeah, but Jim Steinmeier, the introduction by Ricky Jay, they're totally. Mike Caveney and Jim Steinmeier alternated chapters. All their work is there. What they did is where they didn't reformat it except to reduce the size to fit this format. The layout is identical. So there are pages missing, basically, that they took out because they didn't have any of the essays. So it's about 60%, I would say, reduced both in size and content, but the price has been reduced by
a lot because the original was $200 and then the Amazon
list price was $200 and now it's going for like $250, $300 because it's out of print.
This one, I'm glad I got two.
Yeah, this one listed $69.95 and the other one didn't come with a slipcase. It did come if you ordered it from Amazon. The
yes.
with that suitcase
yeah,
that with
cardboard.
The
cardboard. Yeah.
Exactly. So this one doesn't weigh quite as much. So
this
is going
like
to be my reading
pounds.
Copy and the other one will be my, you know,
that's your pocket copy.
Yeah, that's right. So that's probably my favorite.
And so, but the special deal book. That you guys got here is how much? You're selling those for
$70.
$70.
But Mike Caveney is here and willing to sign them, which you can't get that from Amazon.
That is a good deal. And when you say that you ship for free, even
they will ship it in the U.S. for free. If someone can make it to Magic Live and place their order, we will.
Well, they don't have to because I post this each day, so people are listening to daily podcasts, and so as they hear that,
Marshall, if someone references the daily podcast and wants that postpaid for $70, can you do that?
Can you do that if they send you an email with this?
In the U.S.
I have.
So when they're gone, you got four.
If there are any left over after the convention.
Yeah, four right now.
One, two, three,
five.
Five left. We started with eight. And then we've only been open for minutes.
That's right.
Disappeared.
So this will be posted within the next 8 hours. And so anybody who happens to be interested in buying one of those, $70 postpaid in the U.S.
Yep.
That's a deal.
Right. And autographed upon request by Mike Caveney.
Mike Caveney is right down there. Is Jim Steinmeier here, by the way?
No, I think he's so firmly in the Genie corner that I don't think he comes to this. I could be wrong about that. He's like an associate editor of Genie. So
yeah.
He used to be a major contributor to Magic as well in the
right.
early days. And
right.
Did great stuff.
But. Well, I saw Richard over there.
Richard is now here. That's kind of he's okay with it. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope Jim is here because it would be great to have him be a part of it. So I hope I'm wrong. But I have not seen him or heard anything.
All right. Well, Dick, thanks very much. Awfully good to see you.
Sure.
Looks like you're getting ready for the next the next drawing over here. So from H&R Magic Books, there's a special deal for you guys right now. You got just a few copies left. And you have to contact. Oh, let me tell you where to contact them. Marshall, where do they get in touch with you if they need to contact you?
Marshall@magicbookshop.com.
That's with two L's, MARSHALL at magicbookshop.com. $70 postpaid. Hey, Charlie Randall's here too. All right. Talk to you guys later. Scotty L. Okay, so we go a little bit further over here, and we're still in the dealer's floor, and I happen to be here with in Murphy's Magic's booth and talking with the man himself, Mark Murphy, and his son, Austin. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Scott. Good.
Good. Yeah, you know, the backbone, the skeleton, I think, of any Magic convention is always the dealer show. And I would say that the DNA of the skeleton would have to be you guys. I mean, you're the ones who kind of feed the dealers all the time, you know. And so you've been doing this. You were with Mike Maxwell, weren't you, way back when?
16 years ago.
Yeah. And then kind of branched off and then had Murphy's Magic.
Yes.
And then about the time when you had Austin.
That's right.
It seemed like. And then just kind of grew from there. But you stayed in the Los Angeles area, is that right?
We're in Northern California.
Northern California. Oh, Sacramento. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of get that confused. Well, you know, I mean, you're about the size of Texas, I guess. So, you know, it's all just being one state. Yeah. Kind of to me, you know, just kind of drive around. In fact, I was just in California, and I was working at Magic Castle, and I had a friend who was in San Francisco. I said, well, I'll just drive up for the day. I didn't realize it was going to be like a six-hour drive until I got up there, you know. But so anyhow, you guys are still introducing new products all the time. You got some new stuff that you've, you're showing at this convention or that you have brought out. What's happening new?
Yes, we are. Boy, we have a lot of the wonderful creators of those products here demonstrating the product, and our purpose here is to support the dealers that are here, so
yeah.
We send the registrants to those dealers that are carrying that product. Mm-hmm. We don't actually sell the product ourselves.
Right. Because you're the jobber.
Yes, we are.
The wholesaler, yeah. Sorry.
We've got Jeff Praise.
Jeff Kaler.
Yeah.
Eric Jones. Mind is slipping right here. But so many different guys, and so you got, and so they're coming to the booth, and so they kind of demo some of the things. So you got to schedule out front of when they're going to be coming,
yeah.
And then when you want to buy it, then they go back over to their booth and then purchase it. It's kind of what you're doing.
Well, they're demonstrating in our booth, and we're also having them. We have a schedule for them. They're going around demonstrating at some of our dealers' booths too.
Yeah.
So they're doing both.
Now, since you are a wholesaler to the dealers, can people who are just by retail access your shop just to see what's new, or I mean, is there some reason that they should interface with Murphy's?
They can. We don't have a shop. So
no, I understand. But
online, yeah, they can browse our website and they go to their favorite dealer. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, because there may be something they could see on your site that their dealer may not be carrying, and so they might say, "Hey, we just saw something over on Murphy's site.
That's
and
correct.
Can you guys order this for me?"
Yes, absolutely. That's right. A great reason to go to our site. Yeah.
Okay, because you got everything that's going to be new. And you could, how many things a month did you say that you come out with?
We are about 100 new items a month.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a lot of warehousing stuff, you know.
Absolutely.
And you kind of represent how many dealers around the world? Hundreds.
It's kind of a confidential number, but
okay, a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot.
Yeah. Because I know that there are other competitors, you know, with Murphy's, but there's none larger that I can think of, or of course to me closer to my heart that I have I think are good to deal with. Certainly. How do you go about it? If somebody has come to me and says, "What do you think of this trip? What should I do with it?" I'll say, "You need to talk with Murphy's, you know, and just kind of let them see what it is." Who should they talk to? If somebody has a trick they want to introduce, or they've got some creative new idea, what process should they go through?
Yeah, well, they have choices. It depends. If they want help putting out the product, then they'd want to contact Eric Jones or Jason Brumbelow. If they have a product that's already ready-made, they can contact different people on our purchasing team. Kathy Carini, Patrick Wolfer. So we've got a large purchasing team.
Right.
The trick is just make that contact, and then we'll guide them in the right direction.
So you can put them in touch with another retailer to sell their product if they want to, or to help them develop it? When you say you should go to Eric Jones or somebody.
Yeah. Well, they are employed at Murphy's. They are part of the Murphy's team.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Come to the Murphy's team. And we'll guide
I forgot
them.
Eric works for you guys now, too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. So, again, if somebody has something, then they can come to you. And what is the website?
Murphysmagic.com.
Very easy to remember.
Yeah.
Just wanted to have you say that.
Yeah.
And then through there are plenty of email contacts that they can make in order to get that. But again, I do get that from time to time. The people are saying, "Hey, I've got this idea. What can I do with it?" Or, you know, and they may not have it developed. So they can talk with one of your salespeople and they can say, "Well, we can put you in touch with so-and-so and they can develop it. And once you get that produced, then we'll buy X number or whatever and help you market it from there." Then you put your marketing power behind it to kind of advertise and promote it.
That's right.
Send it out. I'm putting words in your mouth, although
you're doing a good job. You're doing very good.
So you tell me, what do you do?
What do we do?
What do you do?
Well, we position ourselves right in between the wonderful creators in this industry and the retailers in the industry. And we do anything we can to represent those vendors' products as well as we can, and working with the dealers to maximize the sales of those products.
Okay. That makes sense. Good. And you've been around, like you said, about 16 years. So, it's going to be about that time again, right? It's going to be hard to hear otherwise. So, we're going to wrap up over here. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate your time. And thank you, Mark, also, and Austin, for everything you guys have done for the magic community. Bringing out all these cool things all the time. You're making me spend way too much money, you know. Thanks again. For the magic word, it's Scotty out. All right, well, we're kind of winding down the evening, and I'm going to go back up to the room and start to put this together because I got a lot of really good stuff for you guys to hear and for the podcast. But right now that I'm with my friend David McGee. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Scotty. How are you doing,
I'm
man?
I'm doing great.
You're so at all of these things, man. I go to this one, and that's it.
Well, you should feel as if that you're going to all the rest of them when you listen to the podcast. You should feel as if that you're there when you're listening
to them. I do. I listen to them. I absolutely enjoy them.
Try to keep up to date with what all is going on with all these. Well, I'm glad that you're here, for this one. And why is this the only one that you attend?
You know what? This one, I don't have...
What makes it special?
I don't have... Well, number one, I don't have the time, and it's every 2 years.
Yeah.
So I can plan out ahead for it.
I guess
and,
so.
I went to the very first one, and then my buddy, who's an investment guy I work with in Dallas, happened to love magic, but he's not a worker or anything. And I said, "How would you like to go to this live?" So 2 years ago, I brought him, and then we came back this year. Well, you see so many friends. I get to see so many of the locals and other workers and buddies of mine that I hadn't seen on the road from doing trade shows for 20-something years.
Yeah.
And so, things change. You evolve in the industry, and... You know, the marketplace is changing, so you have to, either grow with it or you die, you know?
How have you changed? How have you grown with it?
Well, I started off, when I started first, in restaurants. And So I got it. I started doing trade shows after that. I worked for a company called Interstate Battery Corporation, and I was in the marketing department, and they said, our sales are just not, you know, these trade shows aren't any good for us. We're batteries. So anyway, long story short, I went to it, and I had the greatest meeting of a mentor in my life, Harrison Carroll. You know Harry,
yep.
In Buffalo.
Yep.
And Harrison really helped me and mentored me in the trade show, which he hadn't done for anybody. So I got into trade shows and got out of the restaurant, evolved into that. Started doing a lot more corporate stuff while I was doing trade shows. I did trade shows for almost 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And got out of the trade show industry. And about 3 years ago, everything really changed because I met my business partner, Michelle Colbert, up at the Windstar World Casino. Met up there for a meeting with them, talked to them about doing a show for their VIPs.
Yeah.
One thing led to another, and through persistence, after 2 years, her and I working hard, we put together an idea, came out to Vegas, locked ourselves in a room for 2 days with Johnny Thompson.
Yeah.
We created the world's ultimate game show.
Okay.
We give up close to $500,000 a show on a Saturday and a Sunday. Our audiences are close to about 300 to 3,300 people.
Wow. And they each one pays to get in the door.
No, what they do is they play for 2 months to try to earn an opportunity.
To be there.
You can't pay to get in it. You have to earn your way.
Oh,
and they give tickets away during the week.
Okay.
And you get to bring a friend. So they give 1,750 tickets away. We do that. We do a Saturday and we do a Sunday. An hour and a half show. And we'll give away, like I said, cars, jet skis, vacation,
wow.
$10,000, $20,000, $30,000. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But the beauty of it is, I wouldn't just want to be a host. I wanted to do what I do, the mentalism aspect
All right.
of what I do. So we worked it out so that the mentalism actually is incorporated into the outcome of the games. People are seeing. I'll give you a good example.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. So we have five people randomly come up, and because of the gaming commission, we can't control what happens.
Of course.
So for the finale, we'll have five guests randomly called through the Bally selection system.
Okay.
Electronic. So they come up. So I tell them, now, you'll notice on stage there's a cabinet, and you see two hands sticking out of it.
All right.
A cloth-covered cabinet, and it's two hands sticking out. There's a
human hands.
Human hands.
Okay.
And they're wiggling.
All right.
So they can't move or change. And there's the stagehands bring out a big artist rendering drawing of a female.
All right.
All right. And so we ask the first person, in the order that they're called, I want you to come over, and I have a blindfold facing the audience.
Color
and
something.
They come over and pick up a pen randomly.
Right. Okay.
And they do me a favor, color in her hair.
Okay.
You know, a la Craig Filicetti,
right.
King, Promiscuous.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we do that. We say, now, if everybody matches me, you're going to instantly win $1,000 on your cards to be able to play. And I think, so we all of a sudden we say with you, bang, 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 here it is. We go around, we open the thing
matches,
up.
Yeah. That girl
now,
walks out.
She walks out, it's a perfect match. They go nuts.
Yeah.
They go nuts. Now you say, well, how does that really tie into the game? But to win the ultimate prize, you made choices today. The choice of color. Now, you're going to notice the stagehands are now wheeling out a bingo machine. Windstar started out 10 years ago as a bingo parlor, and it's grown to the second largest casino in the world.
Yeah.
Second largest in the world. And they bring this out. Your corresponding color is with a corresponding ping pong ball. We're going to turn it on. We put my hand up. The air comes up. Shuts off. We take, say, the green color comes out. So that green person, the other people walk off. They won $1,000. But this draws our final winner. You follow
right.
what I'm saying?
Yep, right.
So that is random. So the
sure.
gaming commission is cool
they're,
with
they're
it.
They're cool, yeah.
But they've just seen this match. The funny thing is, and Johnny will tell you, we've done a couple of these things where people will, we just win a car. I'll give them a car, a $40,000 car, a jet ski, and maybe $10,000 for gas. And they turn to me and go, and they're freaked out.
So are we going to keep this?
You know, they do. They turn to me and look and they say, how did you just do all those colors?
after they
just won a car, a thing
yeah.
we've got on tape. And that just shows you that people, they really love it. A lot of these people have never seen an illusion.
Yeah.
Now, we open now with the Pepper's Ghost illusion that Tommy
wow.
Ravino built here.
Uh-huh.
We shipped over. We just did that at our last show. Every show is themed different. The last one was called License to Win
mm-hmm.
after the James Bond deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Before it, we had Winners in Oz. It was from the Wizard of Oz type thing. So So everything's like a stage production.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And in fact, Magic has done about a 5 or 6 page article on it that comes out in September.
In September issue?
In September.
Okay.
Rory Johnson came in, did the whole interview and the show. And you'll see the pictures. When Corey or Rory was there, he even makes a comment. He says, folks, I wouldn't have believed this if I wouldn't have seen it. There was a mile. It was 1 mile long to get into the show.
Oh, my gosh. I've never seen anything like that myself.
No, it's amazing. You see the pictures of it. You wouldn't believe it.
Even like the Tonight Show, you know, going...
That's what I'm saying. But it's unlike anything. It is the largest promotion, income promotion, the Wingstar has done.
They have to be going nuts thinking that's so successful. They have to be really happy with it.
We've signed a really
multi-year contract.
Oh, yeah. I tease people and tell them now, buddies of mine, it's my retirement. But
you need some help sometimes.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's the thing. And like I said, I believe that we all I said no at first. And I said, no, I don't want to be a host. And my manager, business partner, Michelle, said, Dave, she's very tight with the casino and a consultant to him.
Yeah.
And she said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, I'll get that place packed. We'll put together this game. You're going to be in front of 3,000 people. Let them see your improv. Let them see what you do.
Yeah.
So after the first show, I said, let's add some mentalists. How would you do it? But I like the way you're thinking.
Yeah.
And I said, bingo, Johnny Thompson.
Yeah.
I call the king. And he hit us a home run. We sat down and we worked this thing out, and it's different every time, Scott. It is the most fun that I've had on stage in my entire life.
Now you say there's going to be like a 6-page spread that's coming up in the September issue. Are you on the cover by chance?
Don't know. That's the one thing that's what I'd like to know about it. No, but seriously, you know, I was teasing Rory and I said, you know, I started getting all my old Magic magazines, and the guys that had the big spreads usually get the cover. And I'm like, well, if maybe. I do. But you know what? Let me tell you this. I didn't do it, and I don't say this being ungrateful or rude to the Magic industry. I didn't do it for the Magic. This is how you got to start thinking.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked business before.
Yep.
I saw that as a way to take that with our sizzle reel, take that cover and spread and say, look what we got in an international publication.
Right.
Open this up. Hear what the GM says about this when we give it to the other casinos.
Uh-huh.
Just keep the magazine, read it. They read that thing and we're golden. I mean, you know, when the GM's sitting there saying, not only do we want that, but we want to have him in our showroom that hosts 350 and have a regular headlining act.
Because we can see how the audience
exactly.
They love,
and now it's a following. When Rory was with us, Johnny and Rory and I were walking through the thing, and it was tough to get back to the room. People coming
massing,
up. It was unreal. I felt like Lance Burton. It was unbelievable. It was amazing. And we all love that feeling.
Sure,
but,
of course.
But again, I've been very blessed. I think a lot of times I've been in the right place at the right time. I've had a great mentor in Harrison Carroll. I've had a wonderful mentor and friend now for almost 17 years in Johnny Thompson.
Yeah.
And I knew that I'd do something with Johnny one day. I didn't know what it would be. But Johnny Thompson is a wealth of knowledge, Scott. He's taught me how to be on stage, how to act on stage. I knew nothing about walking onto a stage. Something that
simple. You
thought
simple. You did until
I
you...
I thought I did.
Yeah.
All the corporate shows, and I've been doing it well.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. But it's been so enlightening for me. And I think young guys, and I say young, I'm 53. Johnny is a little older than me.
A little older, yeah.
But young guys have got to listen to guys older than them. I listened to Harrison when I was in my 30s, and he was in his, you know, late 40s.
40s, yeah.
And I wouldn't be here now if it wasn't for him, from what I learned from him in our business.
Right.
So I think that's the one thing that I've taken
away. You need to seek out these people, these mentors.
Absolutely right.
Because they're out there and they're willing to help.
Oh,
yeah.
And you just have to ask them.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible.
I want to go in a little bit different direction than today. That you're going to be involved with the Texas Association of Magicians, the TAOM convention coming up in a couple of weeks. And we're going to be having magic and movies nights. And you're going to be bringing some people from the movie, the film industry. And I think it's interesting about how that you got involved with that through working charity events. A lot of people think, I'm not going to work charity things because.
Yeah.
Okay.
Biggest mistake you're making in your life.
Get on your soapbox here.
Well,
and tell us.
We're blessed and we have to give back in the first place. And where I'm not, I'm not going to say you wouldn't go and give money because you also want to do that. But the thing is, we have something that's valuable. It's our entertainment. It's our talent. And you give that to somebody, and I don't know whatever you charge, but if you're giving them a show and you charge $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever for a stand-up show, then you just give that to them and you tell them, this is what I'm giving for my part.
Right.
But you go and you meet these people. Look, and you got to be so careful. There's that line between confidence and arrogance, you know. It's a fine line. and the doors it's opened for me in the entertainment field for the people, friends that are dear friends of mine now, Carl Weathers, you know, the Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Carl's one of my dearest friends. I talk to him once every couple of weeks. Daniel Baldwin, Stephen Baldwin, all but Alex that I've really talked to.
Clint Eastwood.
Clint doing his deal.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing the people that I've got to meet.
And it all started with doing these charity
shows.
Yeah.
And the thing was, a lot of guys will say, well, I'm just a magician. They don't know that. They don't know
you're
that I'm not a guy.
Yeah.
That's not a star.
Yeah.
They don't understand. They don't know that. And go in there and act like you are. It's perception, Scott.
Sure.
It's who they think they're being. And they see you and they go, I've never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah.
And that's especially the mentalism stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They go nuts. You know that.
Yeah.
You know. And the response is unbelievable. So then it starts building. Another guy wants you to come to his event. The next thing you know, you got something. I just flew to Artesia, New Mexico.
Yeah.
They sent a private jet, picked me up.
That's
the only way you can. Or unless you go to Roswell.
Roswell, yeah.
Exactly. And it's the armpit of America.
I've been
God
there.
Bless them.
Yeah.
But we get in there, and they treat you like a king. And I went with my dearest friend in the world, Burton Gilliam, who will also be at TAOM. You're going to be there, right?
Yeah.
I want you to meet him.
Okay. Tell the people who might be like from other foreign countries, you guys know Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
So go ahead, tell who Burton
is. Burton was one of the stars of Blazing Saddles. With Mel, his first movie ever was Paper Moon. Then he got into that. He's been in 53 major motion pictures.
Yeah.
Honeymoon Vegas. He was the guy that turns to Nicolas Cage and says, "We're the Flying Elvises, Utah Chapel." And he was the Blazing Saddles. He was the first. His trivia thing. He was the first stars or actor or celebrity in the movies to break wind.
Break wind. Yeah, around the campfire.
He'll laugh and he'll tell you that's my claim to fame, folks. But another thing there. I told him, I said, look, guys, let's make this unique. Let's make this different. Let's give these guys something. I learned what to do on stage. You know what? We're no difference. Who was it that said, I'm a magician or an actor playing the part of a magician?
Right.
We are, and we really forget that. That's why we have Johnny Thompson, Burton Gilliam, Tom Mullica, who does the thing on stage,
right.
And then, it's supposed to be a surprise, I'll tip it here, but Danny Baldwin is flying in. Burton and I were in a movie with Danny that he produced with Alex called Wisdom, and it's at Sundance Film Festival. It comes out in September.
Mm-hmm. So he's going to help promote that movie.
He's going to bring a clip. He'll bring one of my same clips.
Oh.
Just a joke about talking about being a magician to get. But you know what?
Yeah.
Look at Channing Pollock. A lot of these guys
sure.
don't know about Channing Pollock. This guy was a star.
Yep, in his age.
He was
his
a
age.
Star in his time. Look at Ricky Jay.
Yeah.
Look at Steve Martin. Arsenio
yeah, worldwide.
Hall. All these big guys that are.
They had magic roots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there's no reason we can't broaden what we do. We don't want to just stay in one. You know, for 21 years, I had the largest live interactive comedy feature in the history of radio, The Deacon. It was on 54 radio stations across the country.
Wow.
Most of the guys didn't know that.
Right.
A lot of friends did.
Yeah.
But we were on Houston on Kix.
Sure, Kix.
Yeah, Kix, yeah. And so it was a character that I did. Monday through Friday on the air. And so I've had so many opportunities and worn so many different hats in the entertainment industry. But doing those charity events, I encourage guys, I don't charge a penny. They pay my airfare, my hotel, they get me there, treat me like a king.
Yep.
People are like, well, yeah, but you don't make any. Really? You don't make anything? You get these kind of connections? Are you kidding? Now I'm able to give something back to the TOM and have these big name guys come in. People are going to be like, what are they doing at TOM? Get in there, get your picture taken
right.
with them, meet them,
that's
talk
right.
to them.
Yeah,
I want to make it visible. I want them to see that, you know, we're all entertainers. And these guys seem to sell themselves short so many times. And they shouldn't, you know. We're just as equal entertainers as they are.
Wow.
No doubt about it.
Great advice. David, as you know, this is a title called The Magic Word. You're not going to ask this question. So what is your magic word?
You know what? My magic word has to be perception.
Okay, I like that.
And the reason I say that, because that's what life is all about.
Yeah.
What you're perceived as, don't just take status quo.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Don't, like I said, these charity events. I go in there, I'm the greatest thing that they've ever heard. What is a mentalist? But it's the perception of what I did, what they said that I did. I've never seen anything like this before. This guy must be a star.
Yeah.
Why have I never heard? You know, and so when they introduce you, you do the show, you're in front of these billionaires, it opens so many doors. And I've said it for years. I don't know if it's karma, if it's a blessing from the good Lord, whatever you want to call it. Scott, every time I do one of these and I come home, within a week to 2 weeks, I get something huge. And it might not just be from that thing.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I believe in that.
Yeah.
I believe the good Lord takes care of it.
Yeah.
So that's just my, you know, that's my word perception.
I like that. David, yeah. Dave McGee, thank you very much.
Thanks,
looking
Scott.
Forward to
good
seeing your spreads and magic in a couple
yeah,
of next months.
Yeah, I look forward to what you think.
Okay. So, for Magic Live, that was Dave McGee. Scotty out.